from The Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the success strategies and the secrets of the top 1% so you can amplify and transform your life and your business. I'm really excited and honored about today's guest. Maybe. Just kidding. JP Sears is an emotional healing coach, YouTuber, author, and an international teacher, speaker at events, world traveler, and curious student of life. His work empowers people to live more meaningful lives. JP is the author of How to Be Ultra Spiritual, with its release date March 7th of 2017. He is very active with his online videos, where he encourages healing and growth through his humorous and entertaining, informative videos, including his Ultra Spiritual Comedy Series, which has accumulated over 100 million views. You can learn more about JP and his work at awakenwithjp.com. So JP, I'm excited today to welcome you to Making Bank, and it was an honor to actually meet you in person and connect with you last week. So
yeah, that was just last week, and so great to connect with you, my friend, and I'm excited about your excitement, and I've got my own excitement for other reasons too, so happy to be here with you, Josh.
So we're loaded with excitement today, so hopefully everybody's feeling the vibe flowing through the cameras.
We just have like this pointless, misdirected excitement. We don't know what to do with it, where to focus it. We're just like anxious animals.
Yes, anxious animals. So, all right, we're going to focus and filter it now through the camera to the audience so they can feel that excitement.
And my guess is the audience just heard you say that, so that's probably going to be a good way for them to like feel the focus.
What other better way than to let everybody know? Like, I think in your book it says, like, I'm not judging you, but it's one of your quotes I remember reading in there.
Yeah, it's not a judgment. It's just an observation.
Just an observation, yeah.
Very different. Two completely different words.
So I guess tell me a little bit about your background and, I mean, what got you on the path to enlightenment and ultra-spirituality and then just this whole comedy and fun that you bring to what you do.
Yeah, you know, so my background for the past 15 years, I've been an emotional healing coach, helping people help themselves heal and grow and step into their personal power in their hearts. And along the way, I've, since I think 2006, been teaching worldwide classes, retreats, workshops. And then the past 2 years, I've added to that my comedic voice, where I use my comedy to share my perspectives. It's a different language that happens to reach more people than the language of seriousness in my experience. So with that, it's been through my comedy videos, my ultra spiritual videos, and now through my book. And, you know, so why that comedy series came about, my quote unquote path to enlightenment, is, you know, I've been into self-growth, personal empowerment, spirituality for so long that after a while I became disillusioned with the shadow side, with the egotistical agendas that are hidden behind noble-looking hiding spots. It's like we all have an ego and it's okay, and we all judge, that's okay. But when we pretend like we don't, And we just hide it behind altruism, I think that actually hurts us. So that really got me enthused about using my comedic voice to bring awareness to the unseen, to look under the obvious and bring that to light, share it with the world. Because I do firmly believe that which we don't know about tends to control us in a negative way. That which we do know about It stops becoming our master, and it might still be in our life. We might still have our judgments, but now they're a slave to us rather than us being a slave to them. And I love your shirt, by the way. To me, that really highlights one of the places that I come from, something that drives me. I mean, you're very transparent and humorous with, I'm driven by money, cross off money, replace that with the word purpose. Purpose, right? Sounds more noble. It's like, yeah,
I thought so it was fitting for the show today.
I love your playfulness with it. It's a great concept.
Well, that's exciting. I mean, and like you said, it becomes at a point where sometimes it does seem so serious. And I think with fun and comedy, it allows you then to broaden your connection with people. Or maybe it's just me, but...
The people who are weird enough to laugh, you get to connect with them more. But I do believe that, you know, humor, laughter, that's a universal language. You know, you can have someone from China. You may not speak Chinese, but if they're laughing, you understand that. Like, we can all connect through the universal language of laughter. So I think comedy, it really is a significant force of connection. It's not something, you know, when there's a message embedded within humor, that message can go in for deeper consideration. You know, when humor's present, we don't feel threatened by it psychologically. We feel playful with it. So we're not defended. The message can get in. But otherwise, when we're trying to share our message with just seriousness, especially if it's a message shared with too much seriousness, then it's kind of like, you know, our passion for the message can be exactly what prevents the message from going in, because we tend to get psychologically defended. We don't want to be told what's true, what's different than our beliefs. So in order to keep our psychological center of gravity, our sense of familiar, we just resist what's being spoken at us. But it's like humor evokes this resistance-less consideration. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And part of that is not only connection with, you know, us and our audiences, but also the audience gets to consider something that's potentially helpful for them, but that's, you know, on them to determine. It's their consideration.
Sure. And I think that was important. What you said was, you know, as entrepreneurs, we get so focused and we're serious and, you know, we're trying to hit that next milestone or that next goal within our business. And then we tend to forget to have that fun and to have that playfulness. And what you mentioned about the seriousness can prevent the actual message being able to come across to other people. And with my kids, they just enjoy having so much fun and laughing and all the time. And so it helps me try to think back and sync when I hear that. It's like, oh, you know, try to be at their level, especially when communicating. Then everybody seems to connect more and to be able to, like you said, understand that message or be able to at least absorb it to process it better, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I guess tell me what really got you down the path of this and spiritual enlightenment? What triggered that for you?
My genuine path of spirituality, it started in my late teens, maybe right about 20. And I felt hollow, empty, purposeless. And I think that sort of, I'll call it pain, motivated me to search for something deeper. I didn't know what I was searching for. I just was searching for the proverbial something more beyond the five senses, you know, trying to gratify myself and sustain my sense of purpose in life off of just what I can see, smell, hear, taste, and feel and measure. You know, it's like money and status. It's like, well, that, it's cool, but it's not like, it's not nutritious enough to sustain my life. You know, something I've heard Tony Robbins say many times, who I believe you got to see live last week at the event, a thought of his I just freaking love is, achievement without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. So I was very empty of fulfillment. So that got me searching. You know, I kind of stumbled into some spirituality books and emotions also. So I got into that world because I needed something more. And part of that was like, I needed connection to myself. And yeah, so that was very important to me. And when I was 23, I moved out to Southern California, and I was like quite an immersion. Moved from Ohio.
Right, I know you were right down the road from me, so.
Absolutely. And in Southern California is very much a cultural immersion into the new age spirituality stuff. And it was there that I got in touch with like, oh, not only is there like a beneficial side to self-growth, but there's also like this weird shadow side that's so obvious, but everybody acts like it's not there.
And that, so that's where you kind of started to uncover that part of the hidden side of things.
Yeah, like competitive spirituality and competitive consciousness, competitive meditation, who can be more gluten-free than the other person.
So one of the things, you know, for me, you definitely want to know, what did that process look like that got you to where you're like, oh yeah, this is my purpose. This is, you know, this is that direction. You know, what were maybe those steps or that process that went through your mind to actually get you to where you are?
Yeah, my one word summary would be action. I think a mistake I was making in my late teens and early 20s is trying to find my purpose and then take action. And I think that if I kept myself there, I'd still be waiting to take action, because I, at least in my journey, and I think a lot of people's journeys that I've had association with, we tend to find our purpose, our passion, once we start taking action. But I think the sense of control we're after is like, I want to find my purpose so I can be guaranteed that my actions are going to be fruitful to my purpose. It's like, well, you can do that, but just have a comfortable chair, because you're going to be waiting to take action for a lot of decades. So I started taking action when I was 20, late teens, actually. I became a personal trainer and got passionate about exercise. And that was like a gluten-free breadcrumb trail that then got me interested in nutrition. I was like, wow, if exercise is a powerful way to help people's health, nutrition is like five times more powerful. So I got passionate about nutrition, but it wasn't like the end game of my passion. Then nutrition was part of the gluten-free breadcrumb trail that got me interested in stress reduction. It's like, wow, I thought nutrition could make a powerful impact on people's health and my health, but wow, reducing stress, it's like intangible, but so impactful. And then stress reduction then led me into like genuine emotional healing with people, looking directly into, you know, not just the superficial stresses, but the really the matters of the heart. So me taking action on things that were like, they were exciting to me, but they weren't deeply, deeply purposeful to me. That action is what led me into my purpose. And I needed that breadcrumb trail, or else, like, you know, when I was 19, if you said, JP, how would you like to do emotional healing work and teach people personal empowerment? I'd say, get out of here. That stuff is useless. That's for weak women and monks. So I needed the action of doing what I wasn't deeply purposeful about, deeply passionate about, to find that which really spoke to my heart.
I think that's, like, I've asked a variety of people, and I think that's the best thing that it's easy to understand, and you're not finding your purpose is not that next thing. It may be the 10 things down your path, and each thing, it sounds like, led you to the next, to the next, to the next, and brought you on that journey to where you are today. And I think everybody seems to be searching for that one, like you said, one big purpose. That, boom, okay, purpose, got it. Now let's take action.
Man, yeah, I don't think the purpose of our life is to sit around and think about what our purpose is. I think there's a reason why we're like in this, like we have this three-dimensional ability. Like, yes, we can think and that's awesome. Yes, we can talk and that's awesome. But like, there's this more impactful thing called action. It's very three-dimensional. And I think, you know, our purpose is always action-oriented. And I think part of the purpose of action is to eventually lead us to our real purpose. It's like searching for a buried treasure without moving our feet. It's like, well, it's like you've got like a 6 foot radius that you potentially can scour without moving your feet, but that leaves the rest of the earth completely unsearched.
Yeah, no, that's the truth for sure. Cool. I want to dive into, cause you have a book that's coming out and excited to dive into it. I appreciate the pre-release copy here so we can, talk a little bit more detail under my knowledge on it.
Absolutely.
But I guess what was the purpose for you to write this book, or what is this kind of your life poured out into it, or do you have your journey in there? I guess kind of give us a quick overview, and then there's a couple parts I know I flipped through and wanted to dive into.
Yeah, there's a few purposes for the book. I mean, first off, I put my heart and soul into it. And the book is written completely in a comedic language through the perspective of my ultra spiritual character. So it's a deep satirical exploration of new age spiritual and health cultures. And aside from the entertainment value in people getting laughs from it, to me, the deeper purpose of the book is what the comedy delivers and some of the deeper intentions of delivery, if I could sort of make up a term, deeper intentions of delivery. I want the book to invite people to take a look and release that which served them but no longer serves them. I'm a firm believer that whatever works for us will eventually stop working for us and work against us if we stay attached to it, whether it's a belief, a practice, career, whatever it might be. And then one of the other deeper intentions, purposes of the book is to invite people to be unapologetically true to themselves and continue to discover who their authentic self really is. So for me, those are very, very important messages that I think the world and myself, we're all very, very thirsty for. And at a personal level, writing the book was very much a rite of passage for me, kind of like a hero's journey in and of itself. Because it took me into deep wells of creativity that I didn't know I had. It led me into a depth of connection with myself, my truths, slicing through some of the old scar tissue of my psyche, old beliefs, old philosophies that no longer serve me. So it was a very moving experience for me personally to write the book too.
No, just like I said, I just got it the other day. So quickly just looking through it and trying to get up to speed with you. I noticed one of the things is you kind of have a whole section on mindfulness, because you hear a lot right now talking about mindfulness out in the, and it's being put out there and people need to be more mindful and everything. I'd like to kind of, just talk to you a little bit of your thoughts on that. And it looked like you kind of have I think it was like a 5 or 7 step overview of mindfulness and the different areas of that.
Yes, yes. In fact, the summary of that is, of course, the book is How to Be Ultra Spiritual. So we want to take mindfulness to the next level. And how I do that through the satirical voice in the book is I play the trump card, which isn't mindfulness, it's mindfullessness. It's all the fullness of mindfulness with none of the mind, because the mind is a limiting factor. So teaching people how to outcompete other people who are mindful, and honestly how to transcend our own mindfulness so that we can step into the ultra spiritual light of spiritual superiority. I think the world deserves it.
Yeah, definitely. And then I think there was somehow my page got jacked here. I know you had some different mindfulness list categories.
Yes. Yeah, and those specific are ones, they're probably escaping my brain right now because I'm probably like practicing mindfulness.
And then I know some of the other areas too we dove into that you dove into a lot was on like incompetent spirulina.
Like a combination of spirituality and spirulina.
Right. And then from an incompetent and an intelligent standpoint. of the IQ of those. So
absolutely. And to me, that's a little bit of a play on sometimes we can we in the, you know, self-growth world, spiritual world, we can be very ungrounded and just sort of justify our lack of connection with ourself and our own discernment. We can justify that as like, well, you know, I'm just guided by the universe. So I'm, you know, my IQ is low enough that I can be more intelligent than other people. I'm just guided by my spirit. So for me, there's a reality check that a lot of us need. I think there's a lot of, honestly, trump cards that we, you know, and I know a lot of entrepreneurs have their own version of personal empowerment. And I really don't care if we call it spirituality, self-growth, self-transformation. To me, it's all the same things. We just use different terms to describe the same thing. And we kind of think it's different things, kind of like all religions have way more in common than we care to believe. But we all in religions, we call the religions different things, and we call God or whoever by different names. So we think we're arguing about different things, but we're really arguing about the same thing. So with that said, I forgot what the hell my point was.
Spiritual IQ, I think, is where we were headed with it.
So that just proves my spiritual IQ is less than adequate. So yeah, spiritual IQ.
And then with, I guess, as an entrepreneur, how important do you see that as helping them elevate their game, elevate their life, and giving them something to focus on?
Yeah, and that's probably where we were going. So thank you for just so graciously forming that form of a question so I can feel more. To me, you know, entrepreneurship is an interesting realm. It's a realm that for success, and part of success, big chunk of it, that in my definition of success is peace of mind and genuine happiness. We have to have a lot of self-responsibility. We really do. And that can be an uncomfortable part of the entrepreneur journey. Yet, I think the more we can fully embrace our self-responsibility, the more we can flourish as entrepreneurs and work, you know, expand our businesses, as well as keep journeying towards this place of inner peace. And so for me, having some kind of mindful self-growth practice, again, whatever we want to call it, spirituality, to me, that is incredibly important for entrepreneurs. And I think instinctively entrepreneurs know this because, like, we are our own best asset in entrepreneurship. Like, we are the gift. We really are. We're the lifeblood of our business. And even if we, however other many people are on our teams, we are the lifeblood. That's very different than if we're, you know, playing it safe in a big corporation. Like, no, we're not the lifeblood. We might be an organ and an expendable organ nonetheless. So as just 3D print myself away. So I think walking a very conscious path is one of the best things we as entrepreneurs can do for ourselves in our business. And in the, you know, the satirical work that I do, the new book that's out, a lot of that has to do with piercing through our egotistical agendas that actually serve as a barrier between us and growing into the gifts that we are, growing ourselves, healing ourselves, taking strides forward with our greatness. So it's interesting, in my opinion, when we're functioning from a place of sort of like fear-based, egotistical lack, which very rarely will we actually say, like, I'm afraid. Usually it's like, I want more money. I need to 10X my business, which all sounds great, but that might be coming from a place of fear that says, I'll be nothing unless my business reaches the $1 million mark or $10 million mark, $100 million mark. So that fear-based consciousness, in my opinion, it's very egotistical. And I think that egotistical drive that fuels our business, it actually is what I would say is a handicap. It's an impediment in our business growth. But I think the more we can pierce through those egotistical agendas by recognizing them, Ram Dass once said, you can't get out of a jail you don't know you're in. You can't really grow beyond a hidden egotistical agenda until you see it. So I think when we can get out of the prison of our own fear-based agendas in our business, the faster we can actually grow ourselves, grow our businesses. So learning to recognize those is a big, big mission that I'm taking on with my comedy work.
No, and that totally makes sense. I mean, I know even just interacting, whether it's business associates or even with kids, you know, a lot of times you feel, oh, well, I want you to do this. Well, and when you take a step back and look at it, well, why? Is it your ego that you're pushing out on that other person? On your kids or whatever it may be. And how have you found the best ways to actually then remove that barrier?
Yeah, one of the most practical ways, and it's a powerful way, to me, it's a therapy that feels not very therapeutic. And it's just simply do something intentionally to make yourself uncomfortable, preferably every day. You know, our egotistical agendas, our fear-based mentality, I need to become a huge something so that I don't feel like a nothing inside. And trying to accomplish that huge something just magnifies how nothing I feel inside, what we resist persists. So that whole strategy is us trying to avoid the discomfort we have inside. Like, welcome to humankind. You have emotions. I think there's two types of people inside. Those of us who carry pain, and then those of us who are in denial of carrying pain. So if we can actually make discomfort our friend rather than the enemy by actually training the muscle of tolerance of discomfort, now we don't have to be in an avoidance posture with discomfort. We can actually walk towards it. And I do firmly believe embracing that which makes us uncomfortable is the best thing we can do for growth. Avoiding that which makes us uncomfortable is the best thing we can do to play it small in life. I think growth happens outside of our comfort zone. I mean, that's probably stating the obvious. And it's funny, on the other side of our comfort zone, if we do the math, we realize, oh, it's uncomfortable on the other side of our comfort zone. So if I want to grow, it means I got to get out of my comfort zone. If I'm going to get out of my comfort zone, it means I have to make friends with being uncomfortable. So becoming familiar with discomfort means we don't have to fear it. So doing something every day to make ourselves uncomfortable, I think, is a great practice that we can all utilize. It can be as simple as, like, one of my practices is I take a cold shower every morning. And that's a ritual that helps train me to take that mentality into other areas. And then, of course, we have so many opportunities to say yes to something that intimidates us. Like, I don't know how I'll do this, but it's a yes. Boy, that scares me. I'm jumping off a cliff. I don't know where I'm going to land, what I'm going to land in, how far down it is, but I'm going to say yes to the discomfort. I'm going to lean into it rather than leaning away from it. So to me, that is a powerful, powerful strategy for us to pierce the membrane of our ego's desire to avoid discomfort.
No, and that totally is awesome. I think one of the big pieces he mentions is intentionally doing something every day. It's that action piece that we talked about earlier. And if you want to make that change, and if you want to make those get to that bigger end goal, whether, you know, removing the ego barrier, making those life transformational changes is intentionally doing something every day. And I think being self-aware too, that we have an ego.
I agree. I think honestly, the most egotistical people are the ones who aren't aware of their ego. When we're talking ego, I don't mean it in a bad way. And like when I say ego, I really have what I mean by that is it's like your sense of who you are. It's not who you are, but it's your mind's sense of who you are. So I think the more we can be aware of like our ego and its egotistical agenda, just like you said, that self-awareness works for us. But we have to be willing to take a big tablespoon full of humbleness in order to become self-aware of our ego. But if we're just, if we're not willing to really humble ourselves and see our shadow side, see our flaws and embrace them too, see our neediness and embrace that too, if we're not willing to do that, then that means we're not really willing to be self-aware.
For sure. And I know even for me, is like one of the big parts is just being open and vulnerable. Always been a big challenge. And, that's kind of that one thing that makes me uncomfortable is how can I do that today? Or how can I do that at least a few times this week to continue to grow and to, be the best that I can always be for sure. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. Vulnerability, vitamin V. I think that is one of the most medicinal things we can do to create more inner fulfillment. And ironically, I believe, allow our businesses to expand.
Oh yeah, definitely. Real quick, I know we just got a couple minutes left. I remember seeing there was a chapter, Inconveniently Human. It looked like a good one, so that's why I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, and I think we're already talking about it. What we treat as inconvenient parts of our humanness would be our feelings. Like, let me be invulnerable to those rather than vulnerable. It's so inconvenient that I get scared. It's so inconvenient that I get intimidated about going outside of my comfort zone. So those are what some of us would call inconveniences of being human. And then we can also flip that and realize like those are also what create opportunities. They absolutely are. I firmly believe that the degree of our growth is always dependent on the degree of our challenge, the degree of our woundedness, essentially. It's like when we go to the weight room, we know that to make a muscle grow stronger and bigger, we have to break it down. And if we're not willing to be vulnerable enough to go through the breakdown of muscle, it just won't grow. So we need the breakdown in order to create the strength and the growth. So I think what we treat as human, inconveniences or inconveniences from being human are truly the blessings. We can treat them like a curse, but I think they're truly blessings and they'll work for us if we embrace them rather than fight them. And to me, your one word, I mean, there's so much more to it, but your one word probably says more than any other one word, which is being vulnerable. I think it takes a courageous warrior to be truly vulnerable. And I'm not talking about the artificial warrior who looks fearless. I think the true warrior in life, the battlefield, is the one who has the courage to be afraid, but he or she keeps their feet moving anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, that's key is, you're still moving forward, even though you have that vulnerability and you're not frozen in one spot. So
for sure. And kind of like back to the beginning of our conversation, if we wait to take action until we're not afraid, we're going to be playing the waiting game for it. We're going to become a black belt, a 10th degree black belt at waiting. But I think if we're, it's weird. I think what makes us less afraid of doing the new thing, the new opportunity, is doing the new opportunity. So in other words, I think the cure is always found in the poison. A willingness to be afraid, doing the thing anyway, is maybe the only thing that allows us to get to the other side of the fear. The willingness to be uncomfortable is the only thing that will make us truly comfortable.
For sure. And then quick question, what three things that you would say, hey guys, today go out and take these three action steps to get more mindfulness lists or for more, you know, better just overall spirituality or, you know, better enlightenment in your life?
The three things that come to my mind, number one is reiterating, do something to make yourself uncomfortable. Number two is feel your feelings, like find a body sensation. I'm not even saying emotions, like let's get more primal than that. Find a body sensation. Is it tingling in your chest? Is it tightness? Is it something in your stomach? Is it a throbbing in your leg? Is it a light, expansive feeling? But find a body sensation and breathe with it and feel it for at least a minute. It's like we get so in our heads and out of touch with this miraculous instrument that we're blessed with that works for us. It's always telling us what the right direction is for us if we're in tune with it. And it's a very wise instrument that speaks in the language of feelings. It doesn't speak English. It speaks in the language of feeling. And a lot of us don't understand. We're not even listening in the language that this vessel of wisdom speaks to us in. So feel a body sensation for a minute. Exercise your ability to understand the feeling language of your being. And then the third thing I'd invite people to do is look someone in the eyes today and let them know why you are grateful for them.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm grateful for you, JP.
Thank you, Josh.
Just for coming on the show today.
Matt, well, I'm so grateful that you would have me here. I'm so grateful that you would be grateful that I'm here. And I'd appreciate it if you were grateful for my gratefulness about your gratefulness about me coming on the show.
I am extremely grateful that you are grateful that you got to come on today's show and that I was grateful for you to come on today's show.
You're just saying that. You don't mean it.
Oh, I'm looking in your eyes.
Eye contact via Skype is so much more intimate.
I have a new 4K HD super camera, so that's you getting that extra feeling.
Bro, that's better than real life. 4K.
Yeah, 4K, forget 3D. Well, tell us where we can find out about you, the new book, How to Be Ultra Spiritual, and it comes out March 7th, which... you guys can, I think, go get it today because today's March 7th that this video is released.
Right on. Yeah, it's fully available. You can grab it on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble bookstore. So your favorite place, you can grab it or avoid it, whatever you want to do. And of course, I'd be incredibly grateful if anyone is moved to grab themselves a copy of the book. And then elsewhere you can find me. All my social media handles are Awaken with JP.
Awaken with JP. Awesome. And I appreciate the little note inside. It says, I wrote this book about you, Josh.
Josh, you are my inspiration for honestly everything I do in life, even the dysfunctional things.
And then one last little side note was I loved your video on entrepreneurial hustle.
Oh, thank you. I had fun with that one.
So just give us like maybe 60 seconds of hustle and entrepreneurship. And
yeah, it's important in order to be a successful entrepreneur, you need to be hustling 24/7 and you need to be talking about your hustle for at least 25 hours out of the day. And you have to realize that your hustle, it's not just anxiety or you trying to avoid your friends or family or your own emotions. It's you hustling. You also need to know that you need to think big. It's far more important to think about 10xing your company before you figure out how to 2x your company. And then we also know it's all about scale. And actually right now I'm trying to figure out how I can scale my conversations about scale. because that's all I want to talk about, but I got to scale it so I can go big.
Go big or go home, right?
Absolutely.
Well, it was really an honor to have you on Making Bank today, being able to help you promote and launch, you know, the release of your new book. Mm-hmm. And just thank you for your time today, JP.
Oh, Josh, you're welcome, brother. I so appreciate you, my friend.
I am Josh Felber. You are watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.